world, stop designing, home shop, multiplying, and public town housing, project their minds and sound, land, land, to destroy them, for sacrificial violence, change out, back to council, move, smiling, at the world camp, young friends, fulfill the rules of the prophets, and our kids, we curse, we cut, track, fools, and fools, we box, intoxicated doors, with the sickness of our mind, shit's all these things, jungle time,
we're called black people, we're called all of you, not gonna make them oppressed with you. Step our neck. Don't you say that the ghetto, we are crying here. We have to get up, stand up, turn back on the true trend. The more side, everlasting.
I just hope that my yard will go on this. I just hope that my yard will go on this. I just hope that my yard will go on this. My yard will go on this.
Trying to escape this futile. Who child is time to jungle is too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, too shy. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this concrete wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burn a slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, it's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com, which is in the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there, full of new podcasts, the latest podcasts of a lot of the programs on Time for an Awakening. Also interesting articles that you can read, share with your friends, download, or even listen at a later time. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, special guest is scheduled to join us this evening. Activist and documentary filmmaker Jason Black is scheduled to join us to talk about his latest film with Black Channel Films, called Race War. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellen.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Uh, I want
once again, we're in that season, Elliot.
Yeah.
Temperature's changing.
Yeah, I know it. But you'll be all right. Just don't put those long johns on yet.
I hear you. But I'm definitely interested in our preliminary discussion with Brother Jason Black around his new documentary. I think that it'll be helpful, to just keep us aware and awake of what we're dealing with.
It's kind of funny, and I want to talk to him once he gets on with us, whether this was a natural progression with in regards to 7 a.m. and Gentrified, or whether he had a reason for doing the documentary Race War at this particular time. We'll talk about that with him once he joins us. Before we do that, because I think he's with us online here, I want to play the trailer of the new documentary coming out, and it'll be screened here in the Philadelphia area on October 18th, which is a couple of days from now. I think it's Thursday. I don't have my calendar in front of me, but Thursday here at the Ritz here in Philadelphia for people that are in the Philadelphia area. But before we bring Brother Black on with us, let me play the trailer of Race War.
I was on the Los Angeles Police Department for 20 years. I was a sergeant of police when I retired. I'm well aware that there are officers within that agency that have biases and preconceived ideas. So no, I'm not surprised to know that somehow white supremacists have infiltrated the ranks of police departments around the nation.
Race and war. There is a conflict.
We're talking about a system, the phenomenon of mass incarceration, the police killings. This is a recipe, many people argue, and I think it's true, for a new form of genocide.
The fact that it's always white people at the top and black people at the bottom, that's not some kind of psychic phenomena. That's policy. Those are the consequence of the race war against black people.
Are we in a race war?
All right, I have an opinion on that whole subject.
You know, there's no equality. We look at the system, it's really designed for us to fail.
Are you a white supremacist?
I'm absolutely not a white supremacist. I think that's a word that should be retired. I am a white advocate and a race realist.
When I say this as a police officer, that this stuff happens, I'm not telling the black community something they don't know. I'm just validating and corroborating what they know to be true because this is their lived experience.
A lot of people like to refer to our judicial system as broken. Our judicial system is not broken. It's operating exactly the way it was designed to operate.
This nation was established by Europeans with the idea that it was going to be an extension of Europe. So whites, whether they will admit it or not, don't like the fact that their neighborhoods, their institutions are becoming increasingly non-white.
White supremacy has to do with the idea that I'm better than you. And I can, through power, through manipulation, control anything and everything as it relates to anyone else. I am God.
That's the trailer of the latest documentary by Brother Jason Black, Race War, that will be premiering here in Philadelphia on October 18th here in the city. And I think Brother Black is with us on this line. Brother Black, how are you, sir?
Black first, brother.
How are you? How you doing?
We're very busy over here, but I want to carve out a little time to speak with you here again. You've been a longtime supporter of ours, and I definitely believe it should be part of our ongoing code of conduct to reward our friends who've been with us since the beginning, so I'm glad to be back with you again.
And I'm glad to have you with us, and looking forward to the screening of Race War here in Philadelphia. It's at the Ritz on October 18th. Brother Black, give us a little background. You know, I just in a little conversation with Richard before you came on, I didn't know whether this was calculated as far as a progression from 7 a.m. to gentrified to now race war, or whether this documentary was prompted by other things that you feel. Give us a little synopsis on race war and why.
Well, after I finished Gentrified, in reality, as far as I was concerned, I was retired from filmmaking. These things are very expensive. They are extremely time consuming.
Okay.
They take a very long time because it takes about a year from the date of really just even the date of, if you go straight from conception and immediately get to work on it, or as far as, okay, this is the idea I have, these are the people I want to speak to, this is the subject I want to talk about, these are the questions I want to ask them, I need to get in touch with them, I need to get responses. So, and then planning the map out to go film them, then do your post-production. And if you have to go back out, which is something that I do, which a lot of independent filmmakers and really no Black documentarians do, but I'm one of these people who goes back out if there's a significant event. So these things are very time consuming, takes a very long time. It's extremely involved. And you have to be able to maintain your level of passion and interest in it, because the audience is only going to be seeing it for 2 hours, but you have to do this for 12 months and keep up that level of intensity and engagement and interest for 12 months. And that's if things go smoothly. God forbid something comes up and complicates matters. So after I finished Gentrified, I was retired. I told everybody, okay, I'm done with this. This is, it takes up a lot of time and everything. And I know it's a bit of a public service, but it takes up a lot of time. And I think I've said everything I needed to say.
Okay.
And then Donald Trump got elected. And that alone was not enough, in all honesty. That was not enough. I predicted he was going to get elected almost a year to the date before he actually got elected. So that was not a big surprise to me. I did a famous broadcast where I predicted not only he would get elected, but which states would vote for him. So everything happened the way I said it was going to occur. So that was not what made me make the film. A few months later that year, Charlottesville happened. And that was not enough. I'm watching the events on television, and then I see the car hit the people. And that was not enough. It wasn't until the next day or so when they had the press conference at Trump Tower, and Donald Trump walked to the microphone. And when I heard him say the words, George Washington was a slave owner, wasn't he? Are we going to take down the statues of George Washington? Thomas Jefferson, he owned slaves. Are we going to take down the statues of Thomas Jefferson too? When he said that, that was when I said, there's no way I can let that go unanswered. There's just no way. I said to myself, he's actually doing it. He's going for it. This is the first president of the modern era who is outright defending white supremacy as just another legitimate American political ideology, that you can be conservative, liberal, moderate, white supremacists, it's all, they're just all differing political ideologies. When I saw him do that, that was when I said, this is no longer racism, this is a race war. And from that point, I said, I guess I'm coming out of retirement.
Brother Black, listen, viewing your other documentaries, you're very aware of our situation here in these United States of America, and that our people have been at war, or put it this way, we have been warred upon basically since we've been here. Moving around doing this documentary, and I know that you were in New York. I guess you have screened it in other areas, I assume, but you'll probably let us know this. Do you detect that our people are finally are getting a wake-up call because this guy's in office, Or do they realize that this stuff has been going on basically since we've been here, just in various forms, under various leaders, presidents, and senates and Congress, and they have done it in different subtle ways, some more overt than others. But do you detect that our people realize that this has been going on and it's just a point of being fed up, or all of a sudden they have a wake-up call?
Well, we have to be very, very clear about something. Black people as a group only acknowledge racism tangentially. We don't actually acknowledge it as a group, actually acknowledge it directly. We only acknowledge racism when our back is to the wall and we have no other choice to acknowledge it as a group. Most black people are perfectly fine playing the game and playing along with white society that racism does not exist, and that whatever has happened to you is your own fault. Black people as a group play along with it. It's only when racism happens to another black person, that's their problem. When racism happens to me, all of a sudden racism exists. And that's the way it occurs in America, as far as black people are concerned. And it's the same thing everywhere. Now, there are differing attitudes. There are differing sensitivities to it, depending on where you go. If you're in the southern United States, we are hypersensitive to it because we got Confederate flags flying around all over the place. And we got politicians who will just outright say that they are defending white supremacy. Remember, I'm from Louisiana. I'm from the state where people forget this. David Duke was not a political activist. He was a Grand Dragon, yeah. But for those who've forgotten, David Duke was a serving state representative in Louisiana. For those of you who forgot, when he ran for governor, he was already a state representative and running for governor. So he had already been elected to office with his Ku Klux Klan credentials. This is back in the 90s. He had already been elected to office. Now, when you go up north, you probably couldn't get away with that being so blatant. So the rule only changes to, okay, practice white supremacy, just don't be so blatant. Well, that doesn't make you any better than Duke. It makes you more inconspicuous. It makes you more subtle, but it doesn't make you better. Unfortunately, once we start moving to those other environments, the sensitivity level goes down in places where people will not try to lynch you for trying to exercise interracial sexual access. Black people start playing dumb about racism. Black people start playing dumb about it. They see it, they know it, they hear it, but as long as it doesn't hit them in the head, they're going to play along. It doesn't exist. So that's really what we run into. So to answer your question, there are only two types of black people in society. Black people who know that racism exists and do something about it, and black people who know that racism exists and go back to picking the cotton.
Wow. And if I may
jump in, Richard.
Brother Black, and let me say, please don't stop. I can understand the taxing nature of doing this type of work and putting forth for us. But if you don't, and people like yourself don't do it, then we have this vacuum where we won't even know, because, you know, you package it so well that we can be able to reinforce what's in front of us. My question is based off of what you just said, the black people who do get it, does that break down? Like, who is the audience for your film, your documentary, recognizing it's these two different segments of the black community in general, so we can get a handle on who recognizes this and are doing something? Is that a large population based off of your sense of the film, or is that equal?
No, it's a minority. There's only it's been my estimate that there's about 10% of the black population that is truly concerned, engaged, and motivated in our best interest. The rest of the population is either only slightly concerned if it affects them, or they have just gone into coward mode altogether and they're just trying to hide out. They stay low. they won't get hit. And that's generally what we're dealing with. My films are made for the purposes of rallying the black people who are not playing games, who understand what the threat is. And I think of it more as a lighthouse, that it's a beacon that you're not alone. And the real goal is to get black people on the same page with the same agenda. That's what the films are for, because that's what media is for. CNN is to mass communicate to white people what the agenda is. Fox News is in order to mass communicate to white people what the agenda is. ABC, NBC, Headline News, Al Jazeera, TMZ. It's to mass communicate to white society what the agenda is. There's a reason why when a black person gets shot, the first thing the white media does is investigate the victim. They don't investigate the police who killed him. They investigate the victim so that white society will have their talking points, so that they can be on the same page and have the same agenda. That's the purpose of it. Well, that's why I make my films, because we need a black counter strategy to that and a black counter organism to that. So we can mass communicate, here's the message, here's the agenda, here's where everybody should be on this. Now, I can't put everybody on it, but we can do what we can to communicate that this is where we're supposed to be. And that's the purpose of my films. But it's not a mass market product. Just take a look at the way that black people responded to Black Panther, a fictional comic book character. Had black parents talking about they wanted their kids to go see that because they wanted a positive image of black folk, even though it's owned by white people. Okay, fine. But that was what they wanted their kids to see. They had folk loading up tour buses to go and see this. Meanwhile, when we show up, I didn't see one tour bus in New York last night. I didn't see one school bus in New York last night at our world premiere. Not a single one. So what does this tell you? That tells you that black people as a group, when you tell me that a comic book is more, has more importance to you and more priority than real life, a comic book character who cannot help you or your children is more important than a film that talks about folk who are out here murdering your children. That's the priority the black people as a group have today. So I'm not talking to the people who are off on something dumb. I'm talking to the people who are already fit and ready and are looking to see, okay, where are the serious black folk at? That's who I'm talking to.
If I may, Elliot.
Go ahead, Richard.
I was wondering, as I heard the trailer, is there a distinction based off of this experience of putting together this documentary between being whites who are white nationalists, white supremacists, or conservative right? Recognizing the system, we understand the system of white supremacy, but these elements, is there, should we see there's a distinction between those labels?
No. And the reason for that is because those labels are for white people, and they are for white people's consumption, and they have relevance to white society. They have no relevance to black people whatsoever. There's no such thing as a black conservative. As Dr. Claude Anderson said, what are you trying to conserve? Show me the part of American history or American society that as a black person you wish to conserve. A black liberal, you're just playing yourself. Those are terms that apply to white people and are for white people's consumption. Because if you'll notice, white people flip those labels all the time. Donald Trump, he was pro-abortion and all this other stuff when he wanted to run for a Republican. All of a sudden, he's against it. Those are labels. White society understands what those labels really mean. One day, there'll be a Democrat. Next day, there'll be a Republican. Remember, after the Civil Rights Act was enacted, all those Dixiecrats became Republicans in the blink of an eye. What they showed you is that those labels mean nothing. Or at least, let me try this a different way. Those labels do not mean to them what you think they mean to them. Black people think they mean one thing, and those labels don't mean to these people what you think it means to them. That's the difference. We are under misconceptions and illusions about what those labels actually mean. We don't know what those labels mean. You would have to be white to truly understand what those labels mean to them. But if you want to see it from the outside looking in, just understand that these are, the best way I could describe that is a figure of speech. Because you've got liberals, so-called liberals in San Francisco, who are calling the police on black people, just like you got so-called conservatives in Alabama calling the police on black people just for being around. So we don't actually understand what those labels mean within their proper context. But the best definition I would give you is they're just a figure of speech. Like anything else, they are just another way of saying white privilege. And by that, I mean the label can mean whatever they want it to mean whenever they want it to mean it. And then the next minute, it can mean something different. Or they will abandon that label altogether, adopt another one, and it will mean whatever they wish it to mean at the time they wish it to mean it.
You know, it's kind of funny that you're saying this, Brother Black, because myself and Brother Richard was talking about a variation of what you're talking about a couple of weeks ago in the program. As you know, because you did a documentary on Gentrified, you know what's going on in these major cities across the country and some secondary cities where traditional enclaves of black, I guess you would call them neighborhoods, are rapidly being gentrified. And the Europeans that are coming into these areas, black folks would consider them, as you said, liberal. But when they come into these areas, they develop their own block associations, their own block captains. They change the names of these neighborhoods, and they basically want you out of there. So, and I agree with what you're saying. Their attitude towards you is the same as that one that that black folks feel is some type of a raving white extremist. It's basically the same way that they feel about you. It's just expressed differently.
Now, I would make one slight correction to what you said there when you said in all the major cities and some secondary cities. Understand something, gentrification is a national issue.
Okay.
Everywhere. And I know if you live in a large major metropolitan area like Philadelphia or New York, you feel that it's more acute. I will say that it's more acute. There are no $500 million developments being built, you know, in Shreveport, Louisiana, or Biloxi, Mississippi. No, that's not happening. However, gentrification is relative. Just because you can afford $1,500 a month rent in Philadelphia or Harlem, New York, that doesn't make $1,500 a month outrageously out of reach in Biloxi, Mississippi. And if you say, well, yeah, but we got to pay $3,000 a month up here, which puts it out of reach for us. Well, the point is, it's out of reach. It's out of reach for both of you. You live in New York. Are you going to relocate to Biloxi so you can afford the $1,500 a month rent? It's a relative thing. So my only correction I would make there is that this is a national issue. It is relative. The water is rising in every room of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It might be relatively for you higher in Philadelphia and New York and Atlanta and Miami. It might be relatively higher there, but the water is rising in every room of the house.
And it's a thing that came to my mind as you were raising that and going back to this point of us who need this beacon. When you were assembling the people to do this documentary on both sides, and was there anything new to you as far as what people said as in invalidating that there is a race war going on, or anything new that was said invalidating white nationalists believe in white nationalism? Was there anything, since you've done these films and been on this trail, anything sparked you differently as far as information or point of view that you could share with us?
It was not that there was anything that I didn't know myself. And black people just think they know it, but most black people have absolutely no clue and no idea, because we, it's kind of like male-female relationships. Men pass around misconceptions among men about women without ever talking to a woman to find out, by the way, what do women think? And women pass around misconceptions about men without ever actually talking to a man to say, by the way, you're a guy, what do you think about what we're over here, you know, gossiping about? Black people tend to do the same thing. We gossip about white supremacy without ever actually talking to a white supremacist. It is not enough to say they hate you. That's not enough information. You need to have all the intel. You need to know the who, what, when, why, where, how. You need to know the family members. You need to know everything. These people have terabytes of information about us. We know nothing about them, except they don't like us. And that's not enough to go off of. We have to have as much and really more information on them, because they're the aggressor. So what I would say is that there wasn't anything that really struck me new, as I keep following these things for years and always have. The difference, and the reason I made this, was because it was essential for me to talk to the people in this film to ask them about, do we acknowledge it? Because everybody who's in my film, you have never heard them ask before, are we in a race war? You never heard Judge Joe Brown ask that. Folks ask a lot of gossipy celebrity questions. Nobody has asked Judge Joe Brown, are we in a race war? Ajamu Baraka, people ask him a lot of questions. No one has ever asked him, are we in a race war? No one's ever asked it. We can go down the list. Jared Taylor and Richard Spencer, neither of them have been asked, are we in a race war? And their responses, when I asked them, told you they had never actually been asked that. So as a group, we make all kinds of wild assumptions. Black people like to guess things and believe things, but we don't like to know things. And this was about knowing it. Richard Spencer had never been asked and pinned down on the question of systematic racism. My film is the first one ever that pins him down and asks him that. And he outright says, and I quote, so yes, systematic racism, if you want to call it that, does exist. It will always exist. If other people have power, they will use it against us. So we should use it for our own benefit. I dare you to go to CNN or anybody else and find where he said that. Now, once you hear him say that yes, I acknowledge it exists. I want it because it's to our benefit. Now tell me, how are we going to reason with this guy? Your neighbors start sounding like him. How are you going to reason with them? Do you really understand the magnitude to which they're willing to go? Wow. And as a group, black people don't really understand it.
And this may seem off topic, but it's interesting for the time we're in. And it's great that you bring this documentary in this time, because, as you said, you started after Trump making his particular statement, which is the presidential. But you notice that they've been pushing the midterm election and the whole body of people that are getting and pushing for black people to be involved in the midterm election. How do you see those, one, white women, and two, white liberals and white progressives, in relationship to pushing for this midterm election, saying the underlying assumption of your documentary being true?
Once again, black people see white society, but we do not understand it. And the things that they say and vote for don't mean to them what they mean to us. We are highly ignorant of exactly what it is that they're doing and what it means for them. Please remember, Trump got the white female vote. He, a white man of power, wealth, and influence. He is the husband that every white woman aspires to have. That's it right there. Now, when you look at him, the first thing you think of is race. Why would a white woman have a problem with his racism? Black people think in a very silly way about that because we're trying to deny reality. Why would a white woman have any problem whatsoever with his racism? He's telling her that he gives her preferential treatment. They get around you and pretend they got a problem with it. Then they go to the polls and vote for their own best interest. So they just play dumb around you because they know that's what you want to hear. But the reality is, at the end of the day, the issues they have with him are marginal or niche issues at best. Need I remind you, by the way, Donald Trump's election is one of the best things to happen to black people. It really is.
You know, you can't convince. Go ahead, Brother Black.
If Clinton had been elected, black people would still be playing around like we were under Barack Obama. If Clinton had been elected, she would be doing everything that Trump is doing now. But black folk would be making excuses for them, which is really the outrageously idiotic part about how we behave in a lot of ways. If Hillary Clinton had been elected, everything Trump wants to do to black folk, they could have done 3 or 4 times as much. And black people would be saying, yeah, but it would have been worse under Trump. The idiocy starts to come out. With Donald Trump in office, at least now we can attack the behaviors. And that's why I didn't let the grass grow under my feet to make this film and to get the message out that it is the tactics and the practices that we need to go after. So that hopefully, no matter who they put in there, even if they put another black puppet like Obama, that we will hopefully start turning the steering wheel to be able to take issue with the practices and not get played like we've been doing here. But black people like to pretend that we are honorary white people. So when we talk about the white female vote, we talk about it like saying that she's a white female somehow separates her from white men. That's a delusion we feed ourselves. Mm-hmm. White female, like that's any different. White women do not vote based on their gender. They vote based on their race. Because she knows, you take a look at all these white women calling the police on black people, primarily black men, simply for being black. Who are they calling? Do you think that in their minds, when they call 911, that they envision another white female showing up? Do you think that's what they think in their minds is coming? Mm. Or do you think that they think that there's a black male coming when they call 911 on a black person? Or do you think that when she picks up the phone, she feels that she's calling in racial reinforcement?
Well, most definitely.
Now, if that's what you think she believes, then now you understand that there is no distinction. These are mental games we play with ourselves. Please remember, Sarah Palin used to date black men when she was in college. Once they get that out of their system and they've had their Mandingo fantasy, then they cross back over and say, okay, it's time to get that out of my system. I'm over it now. Been there, done that. I'm over it. Time to see about securing this future.
Brother Black, you know, I see in the trailers, I haven't seen the movie yet, I'll plan to see it Thursday, that you've interviewed 2 white supremacists. But I noticed something. And if you look at some of our folks that have become conscious to a certain degree, that I think the guy's name was Jared Taylor, that said that certain language need to be retired. And he dressed it up. I mean, he put a dress on a pig when he was describing himself and what he's about and people that believe like him is about. Now, this is just my opinion. I think that, you know, with the advent of social media, it's an opportunity for black folks to really get serious messages out here and to get the people that'll listen an idea of what we're up against and what we need to do to prepare ourselves to fight mentally and possibly physically. But when we,
saying possibly physically here.
I'm just saying that for the sake of conversation.
Right. Well, for those of you who are not aware,
go ahead.
In New York, we had a Q&A session after the film. Spent a lot to get that done, but it was very important. I actually brought Jared Taylor to New York last night.
Okay.
To the premiere of the film there. A lot happened. You can go to my YouTube channel, TBA. That's TBA, like taking business Africanly. You can go to TBA and actually see the Q&A session. And Jared Taylor, after when we started the Q&A session, he was asked about it. And of course, you know, he started on that thing again, that I am absolutely not a white supremacist. He even said that he wants to help black people build Wakanda. So notice he realized that Negroes fell for the bait, and that's what we responded to. Even he gets it.
Okay.
But he said that I'm not a white supremacist. And then he attempts to define what is a white supremacist. And remember, you can't let the bad guys define it for you. Now, he defined white supremacy as a white person who wants to enslave and colonize people. And I said, well, he did that when I was filming with him. He said the same thing. I said, no, that's not the definition of white supremacy. White supremacy is from the root word supreme, better than. Do you believe that white people are intrinsically better than black people simply because they're white? To which his answer to me was, do you think all people are the same? I said, I didn't ask you that. Do you believe that white people are intellectually superior to black people? To which his answer was, well, yes, because we all know that he said that white people have intellectually higher IQs than black people just genetically. So all of a sudden, when you ask him that, it's like, but you just told us you weren't a white supremacist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you start, don't let them play that game, all of a sudden, now here we go. And as black people, we have to be very astute about that. We can't let them intellectualize white supremacy, which they've always done. So that was what happened just last night in New York. Even after I interviewed him, he still came back and did it. He did it all over again, even after I had interviewed him. He came right back and did it again. But this is important because, number one, our goal should be for all black people to get on the same page. And by
okay.
all black people, I don't mean an absolute 100%, but we need to have the black people who understand what's going on be on the same page. We have to have an agenda, which right now we don't have as black people. We let white people tell us what the black agenda is. As a group, black people do not have an agenda. And everybody else has got one. When this country was founded, well, when the Europeans invaded and founded the nation state, I should say, not when this country was founded, when the nation state was founded, first the order of business was to strike up a constitution. What is a constitution? A constitution is just another way of saying agenda. That's all. This is why we are here. Every immigrant that comes to this country has an agenda. Either a national ethnic one or a personal one, but he knows why he is setting foot on American soil. Black people are the only people on American soil who are not immigrants and did not and do not have an agenda for being here. We didn't ask to come here, so there was no agenda that brought us here. We were brought here as tools of servitude and accessories. We were released into the general population. In a perfect world, what would have happened is all the former slaves would have been rounded up and the state legislatures, the federal government would have said, okay, you're going to need to strike up a national agenda, your purpose for being here. And then you're going to need to write it down. And this is what's going to be what motivates and guides your existence in this country going forward. That never happened. When we walked off the plantations, we walked off the plantations with all of the traitors, all of the bedbugs, all of the Sambos, all
yep.
the Uncle Toms, all of the traitors, all the betrayers, all the backstabbers, all the folk who were helping the white society enslave us the previous day, walked off the plantations with us.
Richard, we just talked about that Friday, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
We just talked about that Friday. Go ahead, brother.
always stated that coonery is legacy. You don't have it in just one generation. You have to teach your son to be a sellout. You have to teach your daughter that kind of thing. And what you find out is that that's not something that just was a recent advent. Grandma was a mammy. So with mama's a mammy, your aunts are mammies, grandmama's a mammy, well, guess what the daughter is going to be? Guess what she's going to be perfectly comfortable being? Because that is the legacy. We never dealt with that. Having a national agenda would help. That would do wonders for us. Part of the has to be socioeconomic and political agenda. We have to be about controlling our economics. We have to be about controlling that, because whoever controls your economy controls you. We cannot have a situation where everybody is socioeconomically superior to us and then think that we are not going to have a wealth of traitors and treason among us, because we're going to be too easy to buy off.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is what we are right now. Everybody's too easy to buy off. Last but not least, we need to enforce that agenda. We need to have the discipline to say that there's nothing worse than being a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing worse than being a collaborator. And as a group, we need to have a code of conduct that reinforces that.
Wow.
And part of that reinforcement is punishment for individuals who go off code, because everybody else has a punishment mechanism. When you're white and you go off code, there's a punishment mechanism from white society. When you're Asian and go off code, there's a punishment mechanism in Asian society. When you're Latino, there's a punishment mechanism. Black society is the only one where there is no penalty for betraying the group. And that has to change. You do those three things, and that's what rights the ship.
I love the conversation. Richard,
you know, Brother Black, I just wanted to say that I hope those of us who go see a film in Philadelphia at the Ritz on Thursday, and that those of us who truly believe that we are part of that 10% and just using that as a identifier, we come out actually doing the things that you said in the sense of unifying and creating that agenda amongst ourselves. I understand that it might be for the broader community, Black community, in order to deal with their uncertainty of where they are. But for those of us who are certain, those things you just laid out, we have to do amongst ourselves, if for no other reason, to protect our own position in this here reality as white nationalism, white supremacy intensifies, it seems to me. And I'm glad that your film on Thursday, for those of us who are Philadelphians, we can get to be able to come and meet each other again and be able to discuss based off of this light being shown again.
Well, definitely. I hope everybody will come out to see that there in Philadelphia. And it's going to be playing in other cities also. If they're further south, I want to make a special mention for Louisville, Kentucky. We've got a really, really low price to come see it there. It's basically a giveaway price in Louisville, Kentucky. So anybody living south of you all, between that Atlanta and northeast area where you are, they have that option as well as Norfolk, Virginia. I want to throw those out there because they're the ones we added recently. But definitely everyone wants to come out, if for nothing more than so you can meet like-minded people. This film is a point of commonality. You found it. Now you're in there with men and women who already are on the same page as you. That alone puts you way ahead of the game if you take advantage of it.
Brother Black, I know that we're going to do about an hour, but we're going to try to get you back on after the screening here in Philadelphia to kind of expand the discussion even more. You got time for maybe a call or two?
I've got time for maybe one or two calls here, and then I'm going to leave.
Okay, good.
But I definitely want to come back here so we can finish up after you all have had a chance to see the film Thursday.
Good. Let's go to Norfolk. Let's go to Norfolk, Virginia. Newport News.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm going to try to keep it short. Brother Jason Black, I applaud you for being on point and having the historical notes. I've said it repeatedly. The white man figured it out in 1710 when he came up with the Meritorious Manumissions Act, and it works right to this day. I also applaud the fact that you understand this is a national problem, and our people, for the last 45 years, I've been told I'm living in the past, and it took till Donald Trump's election, which I did like you did. I predicted when he came down the gilded escalator that white America would show their true colors. And I've lost supposedly lifelong friends who, as you can tell, were actually just acquaintances because the truth was verified. Our people would rather feel good about something than to have the facts and take action. I haven't been personally knowledgeable of your work, but I'm going to correct that in this next 7 to 10 days. I applaud you, brother.
Well, thank you very much for that, Norfolk, Virginia. Definitely come on down and see that. It's going to be well worth your while.
Well, actually, I'm in Yorktown, Virginia, right across the bridge where they put up the first milestone marker for the first black guy who got meritorious manumissions. I've been arguing this thing since sixth grade, and I'm glad to see that people like you are actually telling our own narrative. The other thing I would like to make a comment on is our people have a tendency to want to hear what they want to hear when people speak. I've been raised here in Yorktown, Virginia, colonial battlefields, the whole thing. I grew up around that mess, the colonial parkway, Williamsburg, and the whole bit. I take people at how they use English, and white people actually tell on themselves. Our people just refuse to honor what they hear.
Well, like I said before, black people as a group, as a coping mechanism, have learned how to play dumb. And that's what black people do. Black people understand it. They just think, well, I'll just play dumb. And if I play dumb with them, that'll shield me. And if you want to know that why that doesn't work, just ask Tiger Woods, O.J. Simpson, Cosby. Tell me how well playing dumb works out for you.
Oh, yes, sir. I agree. I get it from teenage years with the afro and the whole bit. The biggest thing I hear is, well, you're always agitating. Oh, no, I confront it, whether it's personal or it's the government. And people, our people tend to want to be ruled by morality, etiquette, and civility, not understanding they're all tools to keep you oppressed and happy.
Thank you for your call, Brother Otis. Let's go to the Windy City.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Derek Talley. I'm a longtime supporter of Race War, you know, Jason Black, Black Talk Radio Network, and Time for Race Awakening. So I'm glad to see these two forces together talking about the issues. And I just want to say, Jason, that I am glad that you are putting this out here because whenever I used to tell people about the race war already happening against us, the response I got was like, oh, so you want a race war, huh? Well, why don't you be the first to pick up the weapons and go out? And I said, no, I'm not saying I want to pick up weapons and go out and kill people. What I'm saying is that there is a race war already against us. And just like Otis was saying, people hear what they want to hear. And it's hard to tell people about the race war already going on against us. And I think your documentary is very important because it's showing that aspect to where we can, it's easier for black people to communicate with each other.
Well, it make it easier and better for sensible black people to associate with each other because understand something, we don't have the time or the luxury of trying to wake up every coward among us. They have inculcated a culture of cowardice among us, and we don't have the time to try to tap them all on the shoulder and force them all to find their courage. That's not, we'll all be dead trying to figure that out. Our job is to make sure that we are prepared for ourselves and understand that the majority of black people are not on that page, but we really just need a nucleus. The human body is made up, like all matter, of a series of nuclei, and that's what we need to do, start forming those so that we can start setting off that type of energy, if I can keep milking that metaphor. That's what we need to do, not worry about the throngs and masses. We need to worry about getting a firm foundation, and then we're going to build this skyscraper up from there.
Yes, I agree. And that's all I wanted to say, Jason, and I just want to let you know I'm proud of your work, and I'll see you in Atlanta on October 18th at the early show.
Well, thank you very much. We'll be glad to have you there. For everybody else listening, you want to go to our website, racewarmovie.com. That's racewarmovie.com. We had a fantastic sold-out event in New York City last night. The NYPD was there with barricades. Vice TV was there. Media was there. It was sold out. We had a live streaming Q&A. It's gotten rave reviews, and I definitely want you to come and see what everybody is talking about.
Brother Black, look to see you on Thursday, man.
Thank you very much for having me here, and I'm looking forward to talking with you all again after you've had a chance to review the film.
Good. We'll talk soon. Peace. We're going to take a brief break.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll transition into open forum. Richard, a lot of things we can discuss, man. Some of the things I'm telling you. Listen, minds think alike. If you're trying to do something, minds think alike. That's all I'll say. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. and just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society.
You know how we think. Organize the hood under I Ching banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And them hitting cameras in the street like watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
Live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate?
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We're tired of that. Corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my rap. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathing it. It's more than just fucking believing it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's C-Lo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
You have this black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough.
So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We're living in a police state. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And I want to thank our special guest that was here for about an hour this evening. We'll plan to have him back probably next weekend after the screening here in Philadelphia of Race War, which would be Thursday, October 18th, down at the Ritz Theater here in Philadelphia. I don't know exactly what that, I think that's on Walnut, Second and Walnut, or something like that, isn't it, Richard?
Yeah, there's a couple of them around in that area. One on Second Street, on Chestnut, one on Walnut, on Third Street, and then there's one on Fourth or Fifth, like close to Market. So we have to look to see which one.
Yeah, I'll find out exactly where that is. Going down there on Thursday. You know, it's really funny, Richard, and it's not funny because a lot of the things that Brother Black was talking about, we were just talking about those things Friday.
Yeah.
And how if we could learn from our mistakes, that when we left those, and I gave the example of Harriet Tubman, when she went back to free her husband, the man didn't want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But once we walked off those plantations, those same mentalities were still in our people. We didn't address the minds of our people. And if we could turn back the hands of clock, the hands of time, maybe we should have spent more time addressing the mentality of our people. Because that some of that stuff still exists. A lot of it still exists.
And I don't know if it's, you know, I'm glad that Brother Black brought up about, you know, the, and we just framing it, you know, the number of people who actually gets it, right? The percentage. And it's interesting. I think we all say that 10%, you know, I think that we're at a point now that it's really behooves us for our own survival and our own health and our own security, that that 10% of us actually reinforce and build that economy and that politics and that security system for ourselves, because it can only get worse. And what he added, which was that mechanism of dealing with the collaborators, which is the point that you're making,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of people who will come and want to, whether they come in the beginning or they come where they see something about to occur, they will come in not necessarily to help, but to be disruptive. And we have to have a mechanism to deal with that,
to
because
deal with
that mindset is reinforced in this society in every level. You know, to be supportive of white, the system of white supremacy. So I just think that we definitely need to what's that? Tighten our network and secure our future in spite of those who are their minds are turned. And when we put that infrastructure together, then we'll have something. We'll have a process to debrief them, to not to convert them, but to debrief them, because they're dangerous. The people that, you know, Harriet Tubman's husband was dangerous. That's why she told, you know, whether people tell us is not true or not. She said, you know, if you turn around, you know, you look like I'm going off you right here. You give me any indication. Because they're dangerous.
Yeah, they're dangerous.
They get scared. You know, they'll start out and then get scared, want to turn around. Some of, you know, go whispering. I mean, as you always say, within the context of what Dr. McKinney, you know, Cynthia McKinney raised in that whole thing of using the metaphor of roots, you know, they'll go whispering in, you know, the slave master's ear, you know. They'll pick up the whip with no hesitation. And we have to have a mechanism of dealing with,
to
them,
deal with
as
that,
as you're saying.
Because, I mean, it has happened throughout our experiences here. Whether you talk about Denmark Vesey, whether you talk mm-hmm. about Gabriel Prosser, all of these men, meritorious manumission, like Brother Otis was talking about. They stepped up for maybe a couple of pieces of fat back, and they didn't have to go out in the field that day.
In recent experience here in Philadelphia, which we can use for symbolic, and maybe I might be wrong, but when we talk about the whole thing around MOVE, and you know, the MOVE bombing, and having the first white mayor being, whether he was engaged in knowing or not, symbolically being in that position of power, and then coming back and saying, I'll do it again. Or later on, you know, having a mentor saying, I wanted to honor him without having no understanding of what the community, or at least part of the community, I mean, okay, maybe the whole 75% of the community is in agreement with it, but you still need to address that 25% because we live here.
And not only that, Richard, how do you feel as a black man? You know, you had to consult the community to see that that was totally wrong. Where's your mentality as a black man? See, you know, some of our people are totally asleep and lost. That's the reality of the situation. It is. It's the stark reality. They don't get it. And some of our people in the struggle, man, they're useless. Some of these people are useless. And I would like to say it's a small minority.
I don't know, Elliot.
Let me say something in reference to what Brother Black had mentioned when he was talking about a lot of these things mean something different to white people. Mm-hmm. And where with blacks, it means almost everything to some black people. If you turn on black talk radio, and especially some of the popular hosts, you hear our people, the Democrats, we got to get strong. The Democrats got to get their message out. Democrats. They don't realize that white folks have set up this system what they consider checks and balances. That's why there's no other legitimate, no other parties. I mean, you got the Tea Party and Green Party, but it's really Democrats and Republicans, and the system is set up that way. And for black folks, it's basically a good cop, bad cop, but they're both cops, if you just use that metaphor or that example. Now, here's an article from Politico that came out on Wednesday. Let me share just a little bit of this article. It says, now, let me set it up this way. Black folks are screaming about Trump trying to put this guy Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court and how laws that was passed in our benefit going to be rolled back. So we got to fight. We got to do this. And it means everything to get these Democrats in there. They can fight the Republicans, right? You hear it. You hear it, Richard. Let me share with you this article in the listening audience. It says Democrats agreed to 15 confirmations. Democrats agreed to confirmations of 15 Trump judges. Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and his caucus will likely endure some liberal criticism for accepting the deal. In exchange, Democrats face re-election can go home to campaign. Senate Democrats accepted an offer Thursday from Senate Republicans. Hold on one second. Senate Democrats accepted an offer Thursday from Senate Republicans to confirm 15 lifetime federal judges in exchange for the ability to go home for recess through the midterms, and also allowing endangered Democrats to campaign. But the calculation by Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and his caucus was simple, that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, would be able to confirm roughly 15 judges if he kept the Senate in session for the next 2 weeks. So Democrats okayed an offer to confirm 3 circuit court judges and 12 circuit judges as the price to go home for the election season. Some liberal activists are urging Democrats to show more fight after Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court. Senator John Tester, Democrat from Montana, deadpanned that, and he said, "I'm tickled pink that I can go home to Montana." Other Republicans said, "I give Mitch McConnell all the credit in the world for his perseverance." He added that the backlog of executive branch nominees means that the administration haven't been able to form its government yet, but I'm ready to stay here next week and the next couple of weeks and do whatever it takes. So we see, Richard, here that you got me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We see here that the Democrats made a deal with the dreaded Republicans to confirm 15 Trump judges, 15 mm-hmm. lifetime positions. So, you know, they feel the same way as some of the other Trump nominees. It don't mean the same thing for those folks as it means for black people that screams this is a boogeyman and we need to get Democrats in that feel the same way we do. Get these Republicans out of here. They just made a deal to submarine black people. 15 Republicans. Judges is confirmed just so they can go home for the midterms.
And oh, using man. The same thing that we're talking about Philadelphia, that they wouldn't, none of the black Democrats in the areas had come back to their constituents and say why they made that deal. Why they, because we have black Democrats.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm waiting for an explanation. Now, this was done Thursday. And if you remember when, the black congressman here from Pennsylvania, Philadelphia in particular, was on a terrestrial radio program. He claimed no knowledge of that Blue Lives Matter bill. And they had already signed it. But then a month later, he came back with some old song and tap dance, like he was Mantan Moreland or whatever.
And, so, and also making the point that, you know, we don't understand politics, but you got to make deals, which is fine. I mean, he's, you know, he also said that, we, you know, you got to make deals. Okay, so tell us how this deal won't hurt us. Because you were just telling us 2 weeks ago that one person who got a lifetime appointment would kill us.
Exactly. Now you got 15 that's going in. See, if we're going to, just like Malcolm said, that the when he gave an example of us being in politics, we've been had. You know, if we're going to do this, we got to use it to our advantage and our people's advantage. We can't play this game with a European mentality. It's totally different. It's like oil and water. Some of our people have brought into it, just like the brother was saying, and they're comfortable doing it. But I'm not, because I see where this is headed for our people and our children.
And it's no, you know.
Just like that segment we played, the Minister Farrakhan says that the government, these people in government are planning our demise. It can't be any more clearer than that. Go ahead, Richard. I'm sorry, got you.
No, I was just thinking, you know, this weekend I was volunteering over, this weekend I was volunteering at this the African-American Historical and Genealogical Society. And here are people who are tracing their ancestry back to, you know, the 1619, and recognizing that here next year they're going to be, I don't know if you could call it celebrating, but pushing for a whole year around, you know, acknowledgement of Africans being brought to this country without our, you know, against our will, and being brought under the conditions that we were. And you know, what gets me, Elliot, is that when people are putting this narrative together and listening to what Brother Black is saying, it's still some, I kind of read into some, and I don't know how to take it. And that's why I don't really look towards them, that the American Project, they feel a part of. So the white nationalist part, the white supremacist part, the conservative right part, that's a part of the necessary evil that they're willing to accept in order to be a part of the American Project. Now, that part of the necessary evil, which it is, I'm just not willing to accept. And I think that what Brother Black is trying to help us with this film, Race War, is to make, for those of us who see, that we should be, we shouldn't accept it, because it's not to our, as you said, Brother Minister Farrakhan said, because in the end, it's to our demise. And should we accept that?
Wow. Richard, the struggle continues, man, and we have to do, everybody, I mean, it should be all hands on deck. We need our people to get involved, to join organizations, to find ways that we can struggle and fight together. Find ways where we can bring unity among a lot of these areas. Establishing think tanks in different cities is a huge start. Because we got a common enemy. And all these other things that we major in, religious differences, some political differences, just personal dislikes. We need to get beyond a lot of this foolishness, because our children's lives are at stake. The women and children's lives, very lives and existence in this country is at stake.
True that.
I'm looking at this. You shared with me that article about some of the things and talking about Philadelphia and the city that we're in, about what's going on with the economy of the city. And the author of the article was talking about it from just, and you could see it was from a Eurocentric slant. But anybody with any consciousness would read that article and wonder where they envision black people going to be at during this these periods that they're talking about. Because just like Brother Black was saying, they have volumes of information on what they intend to do in regards to us. We just don't think, I don't know what some of our people are thinking. We don't study them like they're studying us. And the plans that they have for our people, whether they end up not working, whether they fail or whatever, they do have plans for our people and for our babies.
You know, I didn't know if you wanted to touch on that, but I was struck by this because, and they have no problem with that information.
Putting it out there.
Communicate. Right. They have no problem. I mean, just, and I don't know if, you know, for the listening audience, because especially in major cities, major black cities where was majority population. And as you said, Brother Jason Black also did a film on gentrified. But if you can imagine from the number, the first number he throws out there, in just 8% of the city land area, 370,000 jobs, 53% of the city is 53% of the city's total. 8% of the land mass has created 370,000 jobs. Now, I want everybody to realize who are not from Philadelphia, Center City is a small part of the city. And they're saying they were able to create 370,000 jobs, right? With 53% of the city coming to that. So though people living outside in other areas, they're coming to that 8% of the land mass and 300, but in our own communities, he goes on to say, is it Elliot, 40%?
40% unemployment and poverty rate, 40%. So Richard, what is that telling our people? Listen, to piggyback on what you just quoting there, let me read this other article that I put up on timeforawakening.com about high-end apartments being built all over this country. It says high-end apartments are 87% of the rentals built in 2018. It says there is no better visual depiction of urban development than seeing an old parking lot replaced by a luxury tower apartment building. In just a few short years ago, it was a sensation to see the instant rise of luxury rental buildings in cities. But now they are beyond persuasive. As recent as 2015, 3/4 of the new apartment construction completed that year were high-end. In 2017, the construction of luxury rentals has risen 79% of all the apartment construction in the United States. Encumbered by high construction costs and encouraged by a surge in demand for rentals, developers have bet big on high-end apartments. Back in 2012, high-end properties represented about half of all completed construction, but now these projects occupy the lion's share of the multifamily industry. And of the 16,000 large-scale apartment buildings completed in 2017 in the U.S., 1,250 or 79% classify as high-end properties, according to the property data and quality ratings by Yardi Matrix. Aiming even higher, 2018 is shaping up to be another year for apartments at the top end of the market. Nationally, about 87% of all large-scale apartment buildings completed in the first half of 2018 are high-end. Two surprising metros are built exclusively luxury apartments in 2017. The most active metros in the high-end apartment segment last year were neither New York or L.A., but St. Louis. And they have built high-end apartments, several high-end apartments in 2017, supported by local tax breaks. The urban rehabilitation of St. Louis is driven by luxury developments. And in an attempt to attract new residents, the luxury market is also thriving in Las Vegas Metro, where over 100% of the apartments built in 2017 were luxury, boosted by Californians moving to Vegas in greater numbers. In the terms of scale, nowhere in the luxury segment is it flourishing more than in Texas. Giant real estate hubs, Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, take second, third, and fourth spots with 98, 97, and 96% respectively for high-end projects in 2017. Both urban and suburban areas of Baltimore, Cincinnati, Boston, Kansas City, and Atlanta have exceeded 90% high-end apartments of new deliveries. The lowest share of high-end rental properties in 2017 were in San Diego, 40%, and San Francisco, 68%. So all of these cities that it's mentioning here, Richard, Baltimore, St. Louis, it mentions here Denver, Chicago, Detroit, Jacksonville, Charlotte. Look at all these cities where it's a high-end apartment boom, and they're taking land and doing it. Where's black folks supposed to live? Where's the so-called affordable housing that black folks are screaming for in all these cities? Where is it?
Mm-hmm. And been screaming for the last 50 years.
50 years.
Or 60 years.
Where do they intend for you to live? Shouldn't anybody with two brain cells that function together start thinking, where do they intend for our children to live? Unless we just look at it personally. Oh, man, I might be around another 20, 30 years. I'll be gone. That'll be up to them. We shouldn't look at things like that. That's a Eurocentric mentality. Where do they intend for our babies to live?
And to add to this report that this, he was the president of their business association. He said more than 80% of the city, 127,646 low-income renters, households pay a disproportionate share of their income on housing, leaving less for food and clothing. So not only where are we going to go, but for the housing, for what we have to rent, what are we going to be able to do other than pay for the rent? But the key thing that was in that with the article you just read, Elliot, in all of those cities, and it's here too. They say the house, 37% of the new residents who moved into Philadelphia, and that high renter, those high renting, it said in there, people who are moving into them, they coming from someplace else.
Exactly.
They ain't creating them housing for people who live there. They're creating for housing for people who are coming in to displace. Never. So we ain't talking about white people. We're talking about the children of the white people who moved out.
Then what are we going to do, Richard? What are we going to do? Shouldn't these things be talked about? See, the leadership, the so-called leadership among black people have totally failed them. They failed. And they shouldn't be allowed back in the community. Just like Brother Black was saying, we need to develop mechanisms where we punish these people for being traitors. Because believe me, in all these cities, and Philadelphia is not exempt from it. You got black elected officials all over the place. And they're selling the community out just like you, I don't know, just like you sell something at a store. They getting their pockets greased in line, but the community is being sold out.
True that.
I want to play this because we're gonna. Well, let me take a couple of these calls. We got a call here. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard, how you doing, good brother?
All right, now.
Praise be to Allah. You know, Brother, before I talk about your subject matter, I just want to throw this in the side. You know, with Jim Brown being at the White House with that dumbwit rapper and stuff, I don't even want to mention his name. He's such a fool, made a damn fool out of himself all over that white man like that. But when Jim Brown made the statement, Brother Elliot and Richard, when he said about Kaepernick with the flag, how he disrespected the flag,
mm-hmm.
and he's a proud American, well, let me say this, you know, because I try to be a fair on both sides. Of course, nobody would deny that Brother Jim Brown has did a lot for the black community, especially in the L.A. area and everything. No question about that. Now, that being said, I talked to a brother who was a good friend of our late mutual friend, Brother Elliot, Johnny Sample, right? And you know Johnny was good friends with Jim. Now, this brother, he wouldn't have no reason to lie. He says, Joe, I like Jim. He said, I've met Jim on many occasions. He said, but Jim, he said, what a lot of black people don't understand, he says that when Jim went to Muhammad Ali, he said, that's why he said, personally, I'm not surprised Jim was talking that crazy stuff about some flag, he said, because contrary to what people might think in the black community, he said, when Jim went to Muhammad Ali, about when Ali was didn't want to go in the military to fight against people, they never called him nigger, called his people niggers, never firebombed the black church. When Ali took that courageous stance and said, the Viet Cong never called me nigger, he said, Jim didn't go there to support Ali. Jim went there to talk Ali into going to the Vietnam War because Jim said, you're an American, you need to fight for your country. And he said, Muhammad Ali was the one that turned Jim around. He said, nah, bro. He said, I'm not. He said, hey, bro. He said, bro, you know, I respect you as a great football player and the stuff you do. He said, but bro, I'm not fighting this white man's war and stuff. He said, Ali had told Jim straight up, and he made Jim, and Jim realized if he had any credibility in the black community, he couldn't come out to the media with that. So Jim came back to with Ali at the news conference saying he supported Ali's stance against the Vietnam War, but that wasn't his intention. He was going there to talk Ali into going to fight in the Vietnam War. See what I'm saying, Brother Elliot?
So I thought I'd
give y'all brothers in the town from the wicked to listen on this perspective. And again, this ain't no brother just that no hair say. This is a brother that knows Jim Brown. He done met him. He was a good friend of Johnny Sample. He's a mutual brother, so he knows what he's talking about. I respect this brother. So that's why he said, Brother Joe, he said, I'm not surprised that Jim said this stuff because Jim, he said, let me just tell you what he said. He said, Joe, Jim did some great things in the black community. He said, but Jim always had a little of that time in him. He's a good brother, and all. He did some good things. He got a little bit of time in him. I just want to put it out there, okay, Elliot? I'm just keeping it real, bro. You know what I mean? And Jim Brown, arguably the greatest football player to ever live, but his brother played football, too. So he said, Joe, I got a perspective. A lot of people don't know. Jim always had a little bit of time in him. He said, don't forget, Jim, back in the day, again, not trying to down the brother, but hey, you know, Jim had this lust for these white girls back then, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's common knowledge, you know what I mean? So, you know, it is what it is, you know. But I just thought I'd give you and Brother Richard and the town from the Wiccan Listen audience that perspective that a lot of people are not aware of, you know. But moving on to other things, Elliot, you know, when you see Trump, speaking of Trump, when you see when he pardon. See, again, this is how black people don't realize how we've been played. And again, it goes back to you, Brother Ellen Rich, about the black leadership. Donald Trump pardoned those white boys, one of those ranchers that took up arms against the federal government a couple of years ago. Trump pardoned them.
When was this?
He pardoned them about a couple, 3 weeks ago, but see, it all got lost in this Kavanaugh stuff.
You ain't lying, because I didn't know that.
Yeah, he pardoned a couple of them ranchers, yeah. But dig this. Now, these ranchers took up arms against the federal government, but yet Black Lives Matter, Antifa, all these black, so-called black groups are looked upon as black identity hate groups. They call terrorists and stuff like that. But these people, they were out there protesting police brutality and things like that, but they never took up no arms. But yet, you know, these black folks are being demonized, but Trump had no problem pardoning a couple of those ranchers. You know what I mean? And see, again, we had strong black leadership, Ellen Richard, that would speak on things like that, like you just said about how we've been genocided all over the country, and black leadership, and like you said, Fluff is not exempt from it. Fluff, they sit back here in Philadelphia and let it happen. So, again, it's our black misleadership class, whether it's on the city, state, or federal level. This is why people catching the hell. See, like I said, Ellen, the white man, and I keep saying this, the white man could not get away with half the stuff he get away with in this country if he didn't have the Negroes helping them out, whether it's on the city level, state or federal level, these niggas work hand-in-hand with the white power structure to do their people in. And like the brother, your guest said, we have got to punish these people, man, because we keep on letting these people, these niggas sell us out, Ellen Richardson. What we do, we either vote them back in office by rewarding them for their traitorous acts. Number two, we get these niggas awards. I mean, nerve of us to get these niggas awards for selling us out. You know what I mean? That Negro that was started stuff about Wilson Good Street and everything like that, that Negro should be ran out of town on the rail. But what happened? We'll probably give him an award sometime next year for his traitorous actions. You know what I mean? See, we keep on electing these Negroes over and over again on the city, state, and federal level, and we wonder why our conditions don't change. It's like beating your head up against the wall. You're going to keep getting hickeys and blood out of your head. You keep doing the same thing. It's the definition of insanity. But we keep putting these same individuals in the office, but we wonder why the conditions are. It's not rocket science, Brother Ellen Richard. It's no wonder our conditions don't change. As long as we keep on supporting these kind of individuals, nothing is going to change. I don't care whether they black females or they black males. With that kind of mindset, we're going to keep getting what we're getting. It's that simple, man. But for some reason, Ellen's trying to get that through to some of our people, man. It's like a hitting your head against the wall. And last point, Ellen, I go with this. It was a black police officer on the terrestrial radio station. And his brother admitted he was it's a long, I ain't got time to go into the whole detail, but you'll be hearing more about him. Brother, talk to Brother Choi so you can get a copy of the interview that the brother did. And he was saying about how as a black police officer, he went for all the Uncle Tom stuff. He said he thought police could do no wrong, all that kind of stuff. He justified their actions. It wasn't until they skewed him. Now that he's really he admit now that a lot of stuff that go on the police department, racism, brutality against black people, he admitted he turned a deaf eye to. It wasn't until he got fired and the racism hit him personally, that's when he realized, he said it was time for him as a black man to stand up. And to his credit, he said I got what I deserve. He said I was a traitor to my people. He said I went along with that stuff. He said, but as soon as it happened to him, Ellen Richard, his name is Bill, I forgot his last name, but talk to Brother Troy and get a copy of that so he can play it on the show next week, because we're on the show called Let's Talk on Terrestrial Radio. Comes at 1 o'clock on Sundays. But the brother was up, and he said straight up all the stuff. He said he'd step back and watch out people being abused, and he didn't say anything. He looked the other way. But again, as always with black people, L.A. Mitchell, when it happens to them or their families personally, then all of a sudden, they want the community to rally around them. So I just say that, and I'm gone, Elliot and Richard. Thank y'all, brothers, for the time.
Thank you for your call, brother.
You're welcome, brother.
Take care now. Take care now.
Let's go to 646. 646.
What's happening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard?
How are you, sir?
Yes, sir.
I'm good, but listen, let me ask you this. Do you really expect for the Negro politician to do something for black folks?
No. No. Mm-mm. I don't.
I mean,
I don't know.
Has the Democratic Party really done anything for black folks?
No.
That we should give them our loyalty?
No.
In the manner in which we do?
But, Jay, this is the thing. I don't expect these people that run for office and sit in these seats for 25, 30 years, 15 years, or whatever, at the expense of the people. I don't expect them to do, I expect them to do just what they're doing. But I do expect for some of our people to be a little more astute about what these people are doing.
No.
And they're being used.
I don't know why you do. History hasn't shown it. History hasn't shown it. Show me where history has shown that we are, as a people, astute in the treatment of one another through the Democratic Party and the upliftment of our people through the Democratic Party.
No, I'm not talking about... No, go ahead. I'll let you finish your point.
No, because the fact of the matter is every other group has gained towards the Democratic Party than black people have. I don't see what black people have gained because, you know, they talk about the voting rights and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Voting rights ain't solidified in this country. There's no guarantee that the Negro has a right to vote in this country. Every time you turn around, this filthy, stinking, no good devil is doing everything in his power to do what? To remove you from voting.
Mm-hmm.
To take the voting process away from you. And you're constantly begging him to give it to you or to solidify it for you. It's madness. It's stupidity. Now, you get caught up in it because of the simple fact, Brother Elliot, it's this impression that there's nothing else that you can do and that there's nothing else available for you to do to be able to sustain yourself and your community.
Now, let me say something on that, Jay, because you raised excellent points. But just like the brother was on here talking a minute ago, Jason Black, and talking about how these people are always planning and thinking about ways to not only further white supremacy, but to deal with you. Now, these people know that if we ever decided to utilize this vote the way it can be for black folks while we are here, then it will cause him a problem. He don't mind you utilizing your vote like you've been doing for the past 50 years. They all benefit from it, whether they be Democrat or Republican. It's like they're on a merry-go-round. You go around one side, then when it swing around, I get the free ride. Oh, like a seesaw. Up, I'm down. I'm up, I'm down. And that's how we've been doing. They don't mind us utilizing the vote like that. But if we ever decided to utilize it for our own benefit, because we pay taxes here, that's what's that could cause problems for some of these white folks, and they know it. So the best thing to do is try their best to take it from you. They don't mind you utilizing it like you're doing. They all benefit, and they laugh behind closed doors. Go ahead, Jay. You still with us?
I'm still with you.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear you. No, I said go ahead. You're breaking up, Jay. I think you got a bad line or connection.
Can you hear me now, Elliot?
I hear you now.
Elliot, can you hear me?
Yeah. I think we're losing you, Jay. Yeah, in fact, we lost him. Maybe he'll try to get back on before we wind things down. Richard, let me, we played it before. I want to play this clip of Jesse Jackson and Minister Farrakhan, the mind.
You hear me, Elliot?
Oh, I hear you now. Okay, you're back. Go ahead.
Okay, the question is, how do you use it for your benefit? That's what the question is. You've been voting for 50 years. Okay, so if you continue to vote, what is to be gained by it?
Well, here's some examples where you can use it for your benefit. In all of these cities, black folks pay taxes in their neighborhood. Now, if you look at some white areas, even white suburban areas, their tax money benefits who? Well, you still there, Jay, right? Because I don't want to lose you again. And I'll help you with that. Their tax money benefits where the people live, whether it's a white suburban community or a white neighborhood in a city. Their tax money and their tax base benefits their community. Now, let's flip the script to black neighborhoods. Their tax money and their tax base benefits who? It goes to somebody's center city district, no matter what city you live in. It goes outside of your district and benefits other people.
Right.
See, all of that, that's politics. Black folk, the money that black folks are paying, especially where they proportionally or the majority population in a lot of these areas, their tax money should benefit their community to start businesses, to have business startups, better education, more libraries. It should benefit their communities. When you're going white, when you're going white, wait a minute, Jay, when you're going white neighborhoods, for example, if you go by a recreation center in a white neighborhood, the ball fields are manicured, look beautiful. If you can go in to where the bathrooms are, it's nice and clean, you can use the bathrooms. Now, going to a black neighborhood, the recreation centers is totally unkept. The fields look like somebody threw a bomb at the fields. There's divots, holes, no grass. It's dirt. It's not grass. It's dirt. And if you try to go into the bathroom in the places, the bathroom is locked because it's out of order. That's tax. Those are tax monies. The white folks' tax monies goes towards their facilities in their neighborhoods to better them and the businesses in their neighborhoods. You can't go into a white neighborhood and open up a business or an Asian neighborhood anywhere else. You might go into a strip mall. That's, you know, because they can't really discriminate. You might be able to open up something in a strip mall, but you can't go directly into these ethnic neighborhoods and open up your own business. It's not going to be allowed. Their business association ain't going to allow it, and the politicians ain't going to allow it. But these other people open up businesses right in the black neighborhoods, and they get right. the Korean Businessmen Association, all these other associations pay these politicians off. Soon as a property goes vacant, next thing you know, here's a Asian nailery, here's an Asian restaurant where they're selling beer and everything else, or here's one of those poppy stores popping up right in your neighborhood. Black people want to go into business. Don't believe the stereotype that we all want to sit around and do nothing. Black people want to go into business.
Elliot, I agree with you 100%. But the thing is, and what you're basically saying is, our politicians are not helping us do those things in the manner like white politicians and other ethnic group politicians are helping them. Black politicians are always trying to curry favor with some damn body else.
Exactly.
And always trying to work at the interest of somebody else instead of working at the interest for us. You know what I mean? And this is why we're in the problem.
Would that be, I'm asking y'all, because I agree on both sides, but would that be because 90% of us who live in our communities are afraid of white people?
Oh yeah,
I don't know so much if we're afraid.
Oh, it's fear. It's fear there,
folks. I think we're more, in all honesty, in love with white folks than afraid of them. We want to be like white folks more than we are afraid of them.
Don't let nobody fool you with that.
Wait a minute now,
and I can understand that dichotomy. I'm gonna call it a dichotomy, but I just want to make sure I'm clear. Because if you're abused by somebody and you know you have been abused and you can see, even if you ignore it, remnants of you being abused, do you call that, because you don't lash out at them, do you call that love? Or can you also call that fear?
Nah, I call it love. Because, see, if you know...
I ain't never heard no love like that, but okay.
Listen, the Negro is a strange human being, man, when it comes down to the white man. Because you got to be honest. The thing we allow this cracker to get away with, we would never allow nobody else to get away
and
with.
And that goes to my... So,
that's
so
fear. That's fear.
You got to be jesting with me, you know, Jay, because... You're right. That type of abuse, matter of fact, if you rub up against some of us, especially after being in so much pain, we're willing to lash out to the point where we're willing to go to jail or even die.
With one another.
We're not going to die for hurting a white man, baby.
That's what I'm saying.
That's fear.
We ain't getting down like that.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you can't. But you're trying to tell me the reason why we're not getting out because we love them that way. And I can't see that.
That's fear.
I mean, I can't see that being love. I can see it being fear, but I can't see it being love. And I'm saying that 90%. And the if let's accept and let's just push it in the hypothetical. If 90% of our population who do vote day to day fear white power, white people, white children, and then they select an individual to represent them, supposedly, they're going to select somebody who also going to fear white power, white people, and white children. And when they say, I want your money, your tax money, as Elliot laid out, you know, from your participation in the geographical area that you're in, that should go back within your community to support you. Those white power who are outside of your area say, I want to use that money. Go to your representative and say that.
We don't know what power is. You ever think that? We don't know what power is?
No, we know.
We definitely know.
You know, as you said, when you look at history, I mean, we have one era. Now we've moved into the 21st century. But when we was in the 20th century, and those of us who are talking now, we lived in the 20th century. At the turn of the 20th century, at the end of the 19th century, the turn of the 20th century, we demonstrated models of power. That's how towns were built. That's how representatives.
I don't know where that happened.
They called it white backlash.
Mm-hmm.
KKK, hanging. They called it black codes. They called it burning down cities. They called it, you know, forcing you to, this is ordinary white people on the ground with the support of their police department, forcing you to be able to accommodate their white terrorist behavior and killing those who had the ability to stand up to that—that's
Richard. That wasn't because they loved. See, we can use history as a teacher. Those towns that were flourishing back then, Wilmington, North Carolina. I mean, it was a lot of towns that was flourishing that were attacked by white folks. Why didn't we protect ourselves? Why? Is it because we love white people? Huh?
We didn't want to kill him. We had some sort of...
No, it wasn't that we didn't want to kill Richard. I mean, Jay, it was fear. It was a lot of fear mixed in, and it's still fear now. Listen, you heard... Listen, when you would talk about Obama, and I know that in the street, you would talk about this man and the lack of what he did towards black people, right? What was it? And listen, I'm not in New York, but I know what black folks were saying. Oh, what you expect him to do in the White House? Did you expect him to do this, that, and the other? And you would say, yeah, I expected it. They didn't expect it because it's fear. It's fear.
Then what you put his black ass in office?
Well, I'm not. See, don't change. Listen, don't. I don't want you to stay right where we are. Stay right where we are. Don't move to another area. We're dealing with the fear that's in our people. And it all comes from this stuff that we've been abused here. We spent over 300 years of being abused by this animal. And it has taken a lot of different forms. But it's a certain amount of fear that still exists. It's a certain amount of fear that still exists.
I would agree with that.
And the thing is, when we're talking about, and for those of us who claim to be fearless, because I ain't going to let us off the hook. That's why, Brother Black is creating this film to rally those of us who claim to be fearless. We still haven't demonstrated to the fullest of our ability to be able to pull together and create the necessary economic and social and political and security mechanism that protects our interests, even if we wanted to participate in the electoral process. And I'm saying that's only 10%. Because you can't say to me, 10% of poor people, because we ain't got no wealth, 10% of poor people who have a vision and a commitment, we cannot be able to pull together and be able to compete and defend ourselves in a hostile environment if we're fearless. So let's not just look at the other 90% and raise the question about them. Let's look at us at the 10% and say, well, what is it that we got to do? Because that was a small part of those populations that created those towns and cities who ran for the beat. It was their leadership that created that vision and then created those social and economic infrastructures. And that was made decisions. It wasn't all of those people. It was just a small population. And what is it that we have to put together? And so we can use whatever tool to our benefit.
Do you think the biggest reasons why those towns had the issues that they had and the outcome turned out the way that it did was because we wasn't sufficiently armed enough to protect ourselves? If we were sufficiently armed enough to protect ourselves, do you think it would have been different, maybe?
If I may, you know, and I like to explore this more, but if we were sufficiently organized enough, because when we're organized, we make decisions of what's to our best interest. When we are not organized effectively and efficiently, then the decisions that we make possibly with limited resource about our situation from limited resources and limited vision.
Or about what's best for me.
That we can see in that area is that people organized within the locality they were in. We didn't have a national organization, regional organization, because if we did, then we would have to raise the question, do we have an armory?
No.
Do we have gun clubs? I mean, these were First World War, Second World War, up to Korean War vets. Obviously, these guys were working within the spirit that they lived in. But if we were more organized nationally, and you notice every time we organize nationally and regionally, then we get the state, we get infiltrators, we get the FBI. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover built his reputation off of that. And that was not just a national policy. That was an international policy. When they came after Garvey, they said the British intelligence community and the American Army intelligence community went after him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We ain't talking about no lightweight Ku Klux Klan. We ain't talking about no lightweight Ku Klux Klan. And that mobilization that Garvey was, when we look at it from a social history, that was something that's been going on. He was able to galvanize that at that moment in history and time. But it wasn't like that came out of nowhere. That was something that was already there. And they were building momentum to fight in. They organized individuals to go fight with Haile Selassie in Ethiopia. If that mobilization would have kept going, that's international. When you talk about Pan-Africanism, you're talking about military. You're talking about being able to take young men and women who were saying, I want to support interests of our interests, right, based off of race around the world. That's what they were able to do. That thing didn't just come from nowhere. So, it's something that Elliot, I agree with you. We have to use history as a tool, but we have to not just keep looking at the 90% and the electoral politics and the individual leadership that they project. We have to look at us and okay, what is it we got to put in place?
What do we got
based
do?
Off of history?
Yeah. Yep. Jay, listen,
I tell you, we're going to get it together. Hold up and have a beautiful week, brothers.
Peace.
Peace, God.
Richard, we're going to start winding things down. I'm going to play this break. When I come back, I want to let everybody know about the panel discussion that's going to be going on here on the 27th. here in Philadelphia. So we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll start bringing things to a close. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Yeah.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882.
I'll get back with you then. I'll call you tomorrow.
You can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
Now you preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wine. For your day of leading our people is over, and it will never come back to you again.
Of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party, still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Put the present Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last, because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
when it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and I want to thank filmmaker and documentary activist and documentary filmmaker Jason Black for being with us the first portion of the program. The film Race War will be have a public screening here in Philadelphia at the Ritz. At second, they got a couple of Ritz, according to Richard. I was aware of the one at Second and Chestnut, but we'll find out. We'll put it on the Time for Awakening page for the folks here in the Philadelphia area that want to go down and see the film. And then we plan to have him back probably next week, next Sunday, to kind of review things and talk about it after we've seen the film here in Philadelphia. Also, I want to let the listening audience know that the Time for an Awakening will be hosting a panel discussion and community forum here in Philadelphia. 50 years of black political representation in Philadelphia. Now is the time for an African-American grassroots or African-centered political agenda. The location of the event is the Imhotep Institute Charter High School, 6201 North 21st Street in the West Oak Lane section of Philadelphia. It's Saturday, October 27th. The time now is, the time is 12 noon to 4 p.m. The event is sponsored by Time for an Awakening, the Kumba Family, AILC, and African-Centered Schools Association. The admission to the event is free. And for more information, you'll see the announcement on the Time for Awakening Facebook page. You'll see it on timeforawakening.com. You'll see it in social media for the folks here in the Philadelphia area to be part of this discussion that's needed. And it's past time that these things should have been discussed in our neighborhood. What do we do in regards to some type of political representation other than what we've been used to doing, this Democrat and Republican Party, similar to what the caller, Brother Joe from Philadelphia, beating your head against the wall and expecting a different result. There are independent parties that we featured on Time for Awakening in the past. The Black is Back Coalition with Omar Ali Yeshiteli, Zaki Baruti, and the Universal African People's Organization out of St. Louis. The Black is Back Coalition has a candidate school where they're training candidates, and they've had candidates run in the Florida, down in the Black Belt. The Hot Black Coffee Party is in Louisiana and have run candidates. Kali Okuna and the Jackson Cooperative, Chokwe Antalumumba was part of that organization. He's now the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. The New African Independence Party out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So it's independent black parties that we don't have to reinvent the wheel, that have been functioning, whether on the high scale or low scale, it doesn't really matter. They're functioning, and they can show black folks in different areas how to do these things in their communities, how to start independent black parties. And some of these people have won seats in these areas where they can start maybe re-diverting and diverting some of these dollars to start helping the community. So it's ways that we can do this besides just keep on playing this game on a treadmill of this Democratic Republican on seesaw, and the only ones laughing is the lawmakers, both Democrat and Republican, laughing at you. So again, this panel discussion will lead to other forums because we intend to bring some of the people in that have started these parties in their different areas to show people how to do this. It's no shame if you don't know how to do it and you ask one of your other brothers or sisters, how did you do this? That's all a part of being a family. We help one another, especially in dire situations. That's what it's supposed to be about. Again, for the folks in the Philadelphia area, the panel discussion and forum will be held at Imhotep Institute Charter High School, 6201 North 21st Street in Philadelphia. That's Saturday, October 27th. The time is 12 noon to 4 p.m. Again, sponsored by Time for an Awakening, the Kiumba Family, AILC, and the African Center School Association. You'll be hearing more about this in the coming weeks leading up to the forum. We probably have some of the panel that's going to be involved on here one time or another if you haven't already heard them on Time for an Awakening. Again, before I leave, I want to talk about the lineup. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. Let's Buy Black365.com with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. I think they'll be starting their second season very soon. I know it's in production. Well, it's winding up production now, so they'll be christening their second season soon. But again, they're on from 8 to 9 on Time for an Awakening. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive is here with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back on Friday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. Oh, I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. Be a fireman.
got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children. To save the children.